we did all that.
Okay, so I promise to keep my time. Everybody who stayed here is going for lunch. What I was to talk about in the next 20 minutes or so is that method of interplay of ferromagnetism and Coulomb interaction in quantum dot spin wells. And before defining what quantum dot spin wells are, I mean, I guess almost every one of you has already, I guess, what they should be. Let me remind ourselves of a few important concepts of spintronics, which I will going to make use of later on. One of them is the idea of having an atomic needle resistance, or in more general terms, an angular-dependent atomic needle resistance, which, as we all know, shows up as the fact that the transmission through a barrier between the ferromagnets depends on the relative orientation of those magnetization directions, and you can really tune from having them parallel with a large transmission to going anti-parallel, having a low transmission, and if everything is... So reflected by a single particle. My picture, you can, for example, as you've seen in this experiment, have a very nice cosine function, which is, in this case, nothing but the overlap of the spin wave functions of the majority spins in the left and the right leg. Another notion that you all know is the idea of spin accumulation. That's going to be important if you start to combine two ferromagnets, not directly, but with some normal metal in between. And also there, we know that under some circumstances, the transmission will depend on the relative orientation of the ferromagnets, and the way how they communicate in this way case is while having the spin splitting of the chemical potential for spin up and down, and this mediates the spin bond effect. Now, another concept which will be very important then later on is the idea of non-local exchange, as it has already been discussed extensively earlier in this workshop in the conference and talked by Bauer Gratus and last week also by Anna Gratus. The idea of non-local exchange if you have the ferromagnetic leads and some spin accumulation in the normal layer, that they feel an exchange with each other. And one way to describe it, and this has been explained in those talks, is in the language of the circle theory, and that shows up as imaginary part of the spin mixing conductance. And the theory is formulated on a scattering approach, so it's easy to describe by this in a single particle effect. So the question is, where does this spin mixing conductance come from? And one contribution is understood within the single particle picture as properties of the barrier, in particular if the barriers are spin active, and it has, for example, recently by Henri Cotet and Wolfgang Belzig and others explored as a spin-dependent interfacial phase shift. Now, the main emphasis of what I want to talk about now is how about Coulomb interaction. Everything which I told you so far, Coulomb interaction didn't play any role except for the fact that you need, of course, Coulomb interaction to get ferromagnetism to begin with. But once you have, let's say, spin polarized leads, Coulomb interaction didn't play any role so far. Now, one way, there are several ways how Coulomb interaction can become important once you go to the nanoscale and once you want to do nanospintronics. One system where Coulomb interaction definitely plays a role are Luttinger liquids, and this has been explored by Quinn Balance and a couple of years ago. What I want to do here is try to set up the most simple system in which, most simple non-trivial system in which Coulomb interaction will become important. And that defines the quantum dot spin well, which I want to introduce now. Well, I guess you have already an idea of what it is. It's a quantum dot now attached to ferromagnetic leads. And the goal is really trying to make the model as simple as possible in order to study the Coulomb interaction effect. So what do we have as model parameters? Let's say we have only a single level in the system, some optical level, this energy epsilon, that can be empty, singly occupied, with spin up or down, or it can be doubly occupied, but if you doubly occupy it, then you have to pay some extra energy, the charging energy E. The tunnel coupling strength is parameterized by the parameter gamma. The degree of spin polarization is important, which is measured as the difference of the majority and minority density of states at the Fermi level, normalized in a proper way. And of course, you have external magnetic field, temperature, and transport voltage, which play a role. Now, why should you... why should you be interested in looking at such a system? One idea is that now we have gone in some way to an extreme limit where we can really play with a single spin degree of freedom, and that's something which, as you all know, the whole community written in quantum computation finds interesting to manipulate single spins. The main motivation of why I'm interested in this system is that I want to study the role of Kuhn interaction, and we're trying to set up the most simple model boundary of Kuhn interaction effects show up. Then you can ask the question, is there anything new which comes out? Well, actually there is, and this is, so to speak, the main result of the main point of my talk, that what we found during the calculations, that there is a new type of many-body exchange field which is distinctly different from the single particle exchange field which I've mentioned before. Now, although the model system is rather simple, of course the physics is still very complicated and involved, and there are many different regimes in which interesting things can happen. And one way to distinguish different regimes is characterizing them by the strength of the tunnel coupling. And then you can distinguish, let's say, different regimes where the tunnel coupling is very weak, and the transport you want to look at is calculated to lowest the first order in the tunnel coupling strengths. This sometimes goes under the name of sequential tunneling, which sometimes is a dangerous expression, but you see the same word. By sequential tunneling, I mean first order transport in this case. If this is suppressed, for example, in the Kuhn cocaine regime, then the first dominant contribution will be co-tunneling, and at the end I will show one slide where we want to go to the strong coupling regime in which the Kondo effect will show up. Now, before I'm not really going to show you any calculation, but the exchange field I've advertised is an effective magnetic field which the quantum dot electrons see due to the tunnel coupling to spin polarized electrons. It comes out of the calculation, but another way to see it is given by the following hand-waving argument, which is, let's consider the quantum dot, the isolated quantum dot, which is described by a four-dimensional Hamiltonian, because the level can be empty, singly occupied, or doubly occupied. And since we're interested in spin physics, let us concentrate, truncate the Hilbert space, and go to the Hilbert space where we have the singular occupancy. And this is typically done by Schlieper-Wolf transformation, which has also been used yesterday in the talk extensively. And then you end up with some effective model where now the spin degree of freedom, the quantum dot spin, couples to the spin density in the leads. And that's also something which people interested in the Kondo effect typically are doing. But now we do one step more. Now we say, let us treat the electrons in mean field approximation, or let's integrate them out. One other way, let's just replace the spin density operator of the leads by its expectation value. And that is, of course, something you would not do for normal leads because then the Hamiltonian would be zero and everything would be gone. But since here, in our case, the leads are has been polarized, there will something remain, and the effective Hamiltonian which you get has just this structure, the quantum of spin times is something, and this something is this what we want to call exchange field. How would it show up? Well, one thing is if you have a Zeeman-like term, then of course you generate a splitting, and in the transport you may want to probe this splitting. And you can do so, but for this you have to go to higher order, you have to probe higher order transport, which we can see by the fact that the exchange field itself comes already with a tunnel coupling strength. If you want to probe by transport, you have another gamma which enters, so in lowest order you will not resolve this splitting. But even in lowest order, something will appear, namely, let's suppose you have a non-equilibrium spin accumulation on the dot, then it will feel this exchange field and will give rise to a precession.
What is this N, this vector?
Okay, so now let us discuss the properties of this exchange field. This is the expression for one lead. It has a direction, and this is the direction of the magnetization direction of the lead. And one thing why we like this field very much is that both its magnitude and its sign depends on basically all parameters. So it depends on the tunnel coupling strength, which is somehow natural bit because it was generated by the tunnel coupling to spin polarized leads. Then it's also natural that it depends on the degree of spin polarization in the leads. But it also depends, as you can see in this expression, where this prime indicates quotient principal value, that it depends on the level position, which can be tuned by gate voltage. Cool interaction is very important. It appears here. If you have a non-interacting system, U equals to zero. And in addition, if you had only a flat density of states in the lead, then this integral would vanish and things were gone. It also depends on the transport voltage, and it comes in here via the Fermi factors for the lead. So basically, it depends on a whole bunch of parameters, several of them usually controllable in experiments, such as a gate voltage or the transport voltage. And so you have a handle to play with. Right, so about the calculation, I don't want to say anything. The only thing I want to say is we are using a diagrammatic transport theory, which we have developed about 10 years ago in, back in Karlsruhe for transport through nanostructures. What we have done recently, and this work has been mainly done by my PhD student, Matthias Braun, was to generalize this for this ferromagnetic system. And what you then need to do in order to calculate transport is you do the two steps. In the first step, you have to derive what is the state of your system, what is the charge and the spin on the quantum they're doing. And then in the second step, you see how this will affect the current through the system. Now, the kinetic equation or rate equation for or the mass equation, whatever you want to call them, for the charge degree of freedom look similar to what we are used from non-magnetic systems, also with some deviations. But now the important thing that also the spin degree of freedom has to be calculated subconsistently. If you write down those real equations, and here I wrote them in a somewhat simplified form, for the recoupling limit and the linear response, we see that there are three ways how the spin degree of freedom can change on the quantum dot. What you can identify is a spin accumulation, which is due to the fact that if you inject spin from one side, polarize along this direction, you want to pull out along this direction, then you have spin accumulation in a different direction, that is indicated here. And of course, it's a non-equilibrium effect. If you vanish or you change the sign, if you reverse the bias. And as usual, for spin accumulation. You have one term which can be related to spin relaxation, and even if you manage to somehow drop out all spin relaxation due to coupling to other degrees of freedom, there's always one mechanism which leads to relaxation, which is tunneling itself. If the electron turns out of the dot, then the charge is gone and the spin is gone. But there was a third term which appears as S cross something, and this something is nothing else but the exchange field I've been introduced before. And the way why I call it exchange field in this case can be seen just by this structure because it behaves as a magnetic field. Now, if you.
Sorry, is it?
Yeah.
Those are all the terms in the equation?
Right. So, for the for this given situation that we are talking about, lowest order gamma and linear response, it looks exactly like this.
I mean, I'm a little confused if I take zero voltage, then so I go into equilibrium when I expect the spin to align with the exchange field.
No, in order that the exchange field itself is only of order gamma, so
again,
for the use of the splitting, you have to calculate things in higher order. So you will not probe this in lowest order transport.
Sorry.
You're right.
I mean, I'm not talking about transport, right? I turn off the voltage, I have the everything at the same chemical potential.
Right.
And I just say, well, you know, there's some induced exchange coupling, as you explained, by
right.
So tunneling in and out, and everything. That. There's not enough symmetry to protect the spin. It would point in some direction. You would,
so
if I you assumed do, that was the Hamiltonian, I would have thought it would point parallel to the.
If you do the full calculation, you're right. Then there will be a spin accumulation due to this splitting. Now, what I'm calculating here is only the lowest order contribution to this occupation of the dot, because this is only what I want to make use of in the transport calculation afterwards. But I mean.
Lowest order in gamma?
Right. To say it another way, I think that if you look at the second equation,
yeah.
Right, which is what you're thinking about,
yes.
Right, then there's what you're going to say is that he, in general, he would write that as that red S should be replaced by S minus something proportional to gamma times this equilibrium right?
Right, so here we have only present proportion to gamma, so then we have plus through proportion to gamma.
All right.
Okay, thank you. So very often people like to just write down rate equations and solve them instead of doing some fancy diagrammatics or whatsoever, which in many cases is fine. And also in this case, it has been done. But if you set up the rate equation and just say, well, now the tunneling rate becomes spin dependent, what you will find is in those two first terms, you will not get the third term, which is one reason why we like not to think what are the processes first and then write it down, but just calculate things coming from the Hamiltonian consistently up to a given order what you want to do. Okay, so here my crewmate's version of a very short movie, which I will start in a second. So to visualize what I just said, suppose we have the left and the right lead polarized along those axes, and you apply a transport voltage. What will appear is that there's a spin accumulation here along the difference direction, for symmetric coupling at least, and so in this case here along the y direction. Short movie, it's just this. If you now, in addition to. Oh, I'm sorry, but still, it's two pictures. So now, if in addition you have an exchange field, which, as I just discussed, is along the direction of the magnetic fields, so the sum of them is here in this case along the x direction, then the spin will precess out of this xy plane and will acquire a finite component in the set direction. And now, since the lifetime of the electron in the quantum dot and this precession frequency are both proportional to gamma, on average you will have some finite angle alpha and it will modify the transport. Why will it modify the transport? We all know that spin accumulation usually have the tendency to suppress the transport. Now, if by whatever means you rotate the spin out of its unfavorable position, then this suppression is reduced, so transport can go up. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the way how in most of the situations we will see the transport. So now, let's look at transport. One example you can look at the linear response conductance, and here it's plotted as a function of the relative angle theta. And then you see that depending on the level position, so depending on the gate voltage, the exchange field will be more or less effective, and you can have really different forms. On the blue curve, there you don't see any effect on the exchange field. The black curve, you see that by rotating the spin out of its unfavorable position, the transmission goes up again, and the spin bulk effect, if you like, is reduced. So that would be an example for the gauge voltage dependence of the exchange field. Let's look at the transport voltage dependence. For this, you may want to look at the current as a function of transport voltage. Now we have plotted for different values of the degree of spin polarization. And under some circumstances, you will find a pronounced negative differential conductance. And also this can be understood as an effect of the exchange field. In the nonlinear response, the spin on the dot always tries to anti-align with the drain electrode, and once this is reached, then it somehow blocks the transport, and this defines the valley down here or here. Now, if in addition you have some field which rotates again the spin out of its unfavorable position, transport goes up, and this is what happens. So this point is special in the sense that here the exchange field changes its sign, so it's zero, it's not there. If you go away from this point, the exchange field comes into play, and then transport is increased again. So that would constitute an example for bias voltage dependence of the exchange field. Another way to look at what is happening on the dot is, of course, you can now try, in addition, to come with some handle from the outside to manipulate the spin. And the most simple thing we can think of is, of course, a magnetic field. And then you can do something which in the optics community is well known as the Conway effect. If you apply a magnetic field, and this magnetic field is very large, then this means any accumulated spin will be precessing so fast that the spin accumulation is basically gone, and the transport is quite high. If this is not the case, and you do have spin accumulation, then the transport is reduced, and by this line shape, then you can access from the width the inverse spin mark time. The position, which is not exactly at zero, would indicate the exchange field, and from the depth you can infer something about the your spin accumulation. Another thing, how directly to access the dynamics on the of the spin on the quantum dot is trying to translate what people are used to do in optics by some pump probe measurement here to transport, but not pump probe, but in a steady state condition. How would you do that? Well, you could do that by looking at the frequency dependent current noise. And in a sense, it would correspond to such a pump probe experiment in a sense that the current noise is an expectation value of two current operators. So the first one, let's say, is associated with an electron tunneling in, and then having this given orientation, then it does something inside, and when it goes out, you probe it again, because also here you have a ferromagnetic lead, and what you get is maybe what you expect, that at the frequency, reception frequency, you will see some feature, and by the relative orientation of the ferromagnetic leads, you can go from dispersion absorption line shape as people in the community of NMR are used to characterize it. So here the current noise would be a probe, but more direct probe of the spin dynamic. So now maybe I have another 3 minutes or 4 minutes?
Three.
Okay. Three, so
you should have asked four or five.
Well, you know, I'm going to speak fast, and then time dilatation will give me. So everything which I've told you so far was in the weak cup and weak tunnel, weak cup and weak with the first order transport is probed. You can also look at second order co-tunneling, and if you go deep in the co-tunneling regime and look what happens for the parallel and anti-parallel configuration of the leads, then you will see that the conductance as a function of transport voltage for the parallel configuration is pretty boring. But for the anti-parallel, a very pronounced sealed bias anomaly is developed. And this has to do with the fact that the width of this anomaly is temperature. And this has to do with the fact that whether temperature is larger or smaller than bias voltage, co-tunneling processes on one barrier become important relative to the two barrier co-tunneling processes, and they will provide an extra channel of spin relaxation, and this will modify the simulation. And if you think it through carefully, you will find such a zero bias anomaly. You can also do that at full second order calculation in the full parameter space for all transport voltages and gate voltages, and discuss what is the value of the TMR. And you see this figure is colorful, so it's very different in many different regimes. And now I've only used the 1.5 minutes, so I have 1 minute left for the contour effect.
So that 2.5.
2.5, okay. So then I have 30 seconds for the strong cupping regime for the contour effect. For those who don't know the contour effect, I can explain it in 10 seconds. So, you know, we need to know about the contour effect is you have to go through the situation where the door is always simply occupied with either spin up or down. You want to have spin degeneracy, and then at low temperature, a complicated many-body stage develops, and this will lead to a screening of the local spin, and this will lead to increased conductance. That's a contour effect. Now, if you have half-metallic leads, so let's say only spin-up electrons available, then it's clear you cannot make any screening, and therefore the contour effect is gone. But what happens if you have some finite value? There have been a couple of papers around, and I think the contour effect is very fashionable, and everybody has its own method which he likes. There have been a number of papers with different conclusions, and many of them then necessarily not correct. Well, if they contradict each other, at least something has to be wrong. I think that the picture which is how one should think about is that in this case, the ferromagnetism comes in again via this exchange which we are talking about. So you generate a splitting, and it's like the Coulomb effect in the magnetic field. However, now you have, in addition, the possibility to use the magnetic field to either further increase or even reduce the splitting and go back to the strong coupling limit. And another effect, since the screening is in some way harder, in quote-unquote, you will generate a spin polarization-dependent Coulomb temperature, and that's the way how you interpolate between those two things. And, These figures you have already seen during the conference, an experiment in the group of Dan Ralph, where they have actually measured the combo effect in a C16 attached to nickel electrodes. What you see here is the position of the levels as function of E field, and you see that there's some zero field splitting which remains, which in this application has been addressed exactly to this exchange field, which we have been predicted 1 year earlier. And this is also an experiment which you have seen during the conference, where a carbon nanotube is put between ferromagnetic electrodes, and you see also some red curve, which is some theory, as we know, Hippoté and Morton Belzig, where they use basically a spin-dependent bright heat transmission, where they had to put in order to get a reasonable fit some spin splitting. And, to my opinion, what is the nature of the spin splitting? Whether it's due to single particle physics, interfacial dependence, spin-dependent interfacial phase shift, or whether it is interaction induced, or whether it's both, I think I don't know the answer. And so I come to the final slide. One-dot spin valves combine spintronics with nanophysics, or let's say Coulomb direction aspects of nanophysics. What we find is a new type of many-body exchange field, where the nice thing about it is it's really tunable by the system parameters, in particular the gate and the bias voltage. And I finish up with that slide, thanking the collaborators, emphasizing particularly Matthias Braun, who has done all the work for the recoupling regime, and Jan Martinek, who was involved in all the works and has been leading for the condo physics. Thank you.
I have one question about, Gavitt, in this talk, he stressed there are two different types of exchange, like Josip, he called a virtual process somehow, and then there's this boundary effect. But when I look at your exchange field, it just adds up both contributions from both leads, so right. It really looks like a boundary effect as well. So is it really something different?
So I think it's something different. I mean, you definitely need tunneling, so in this sense it's a boundary effect. The other way to pose the same question, how would I introduce this boundary extension field in the calculation on the Hamiltonian? And I think from the paper by Dr. Cote and some of the Besson collaborators, it is clear when deriving the tunnel Hamiltonian, this splitting should be put here as an extra term, sigma term, in the energy in the Hamiltonian. So it's like an extra sigma term or B field, which you put here in the very beginning, which means then the effect will, at the end, the spin will see the sum of the external exchange field, the single particle, the external magnetic field, the single particle exchange field, and this exchange field between interaction. So I would say, at least in the transport regimes which are pro, it will just add up. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Justin, comment to the experiments. There have been more recent experiments which have been carried out by Morpurgo in Delft, mm-hmm. which are really in the interferometric regime in which there is no Coulomb blockade.
Interferometry means that the
very tunneling, very strong coupling, limits strong coupling, of only contacts, and they see exactly the same effects like Schöneberger. So I guess this would point to the fact that the single particle exchanges in this case.
I think it really depends on the experiment. I would also think that for a stronger coupling, the single particle will dominate. For stronger coupling, for weaker coupling, the exchange will dominate.
Yeah, so our student Wetzel has done some estimations, and they seem to be in sort of a realistic type of contacts of the same order of magnitude. And it would require sort of an analysis of the Coulomb blockade peak to find out what's really in what situation.
Right. I think that is what has to be done to look at as a function of those parameters of the how things change. But I guess, you know it better than me, but for the single particle, it is also proportional to gamma of the particle. Exchange field proportional to gamma, here's proportional to gamma as well. So they may be of the same order of magnitude.
Yes. But this one depends also on U and so forth.
Right, exactly.
And especially close to this Coulomb blockade peak, it should be most clearly because This one is gate dependent, the other one is not. So there is the most sensitive.
Right. One. So the gate dependence will be one handle to identify.
And this was my question: if there's an experimental, what experiment one should do, or what quality one should look at to distinguish these two?
The gate dependence. Gate dependence. Yeah. The Coulomb, the form of the Coulomb gate.
So, for example. So here it was. For example, here you have, let's say, the angular dependent GMR for different gate voltages. If it's always the same exchange, you would expect the same curve, let's say the red one. If it's gate dependent, you should expect different ones, for example.
I mean, we do have quantum dots that are connected to spin polarized leads, so I'm just curious why you would not consider this situation.
Right, I mean, that was actually my question. You have been talking about parallel alignment, right?
That's the only thing we can do.
Yeah, and so the unfortunate thing, if you have parallel alignment, and if you have no spinning correlation at all, well, it is along this direction, of course, the exchange field as well, so anything which comes from precession will not show up, then you need to go to non-polynomial. That's...
Just tell us, pesky electrons, what to do.
But I'm happy to check this here and see if we can identify something in the system too.
Okay, I think we should really move on to finish before.